Time once again on CCO for a wine chat with our friend from Haskell's, Jack Farrell. Good morning, Jack, on a beautiful Saturday morning.
Boy, we sure lucked out with the weather lately. It has just been great.
Fantastic day.
Well, what the?
I hope it. I think it was, according to this forecast. Now, well, what can we talk about today?
Today, I thought I would talk about a much-discussed wine subject, and that's rosé wine. You know, should you drink them? Shouldn't you drink them? Are they serious wines? Aren't they? Et cetera. Well, indeed they are. And, you know, as a matter of fact, the history of rosé wines is there was probably, when they first started to make wine, all wines were probably a little on the rosé color. They liked to drink wine that was fresh. And if wine, grapes stayed on in the must too long, that wasn't considered fresh wine. It was considered old and stronger, etc. And they realized they made stronger wine if they left the skins and the seeds in touch with the wine. And then when they made white wine, they weren't so sophisticated, and that turned out fairly well. But most of the red wines were a very light color, and they weren't so sophisticated, and that turned out fairly well. But most of the red wines were a very light color. As a matter of fact, the English used to call, well, they still do, call Bordeaux claret. Look how claret is, because the wines prior to that, they were murky. And these clear wines that we now call rosés were around everywhere. And there's really three ways to produce rosé wine. Skin contact, and that's where, you know, the grapes are left in touch with the must, and then Sangie is something that's sort of simple. What they do that very often when they're making a big red wine, they take a little of the juice off so that what's left becomes more concentrated in the red. And with that Sangie, they ferment that and make a rosé. And then there's blending, where you blend red and white wine. Blending is pretty much obsolete in every wine-producing country in the world to produce rosé. So rosé wine today is a very, very serious thing. You know, it was at the end of World War II when people came back from overseas, a million men who were fighting in Europe, and got used to seeing people drink wine with their meals. There were Portuguese families that capitalized on that. There were three big four Portuguese families who capitalized on the popularity of their sweet rosé wine. One was called Matus, another was called Lancers, and the third one was called Alianca. And these wines sold millions of cases around the world. As a matter of fact, they're still sold around the world, but they're decidedly sweet, and they aren't as popular as they once were, that's for certain. But an awful lot of people of a certain age will remember probably their first taste of wine was one of those three, Matus, Lancers, or Alianca. In fact, I remember Murray's in downtown Minneapolis used to have a bottle of Matus, or a copy of the bottle of Matus, on their marquee that you went in, because when you ordered the special steak, you got a free bottle of Matus wine to enjoy your steak with. Then, of course, we produced a phenomenon in this country called White Zinfandel. And that was almost an accident. At the time they first made it, there was an absolute huge demand for white wine and not enough white wine to fill it. So the folks at Sutter Home decided that they had a huge vat of Zinfandel, and they'd make a blush wine or a rosé wine out of that Zinfandel, and they would call it White Zinfandel, and it was really a rosé. Again, much like Matus in that, those white Zinfandels, and they were made by lots of different vineyards. The predominant one was Sutter Home, of course, were sweet wines. Well, you know, fast forward a little bit to about, I don't know, maybe it was 20-some years ago, 25 years ago, I was walking at a big exhibition in Bordeaux, and I ran into my old friend Alexis Lachine's son, Sasha. And, you know, we hadn't seen each other in several years since they sold Pure Lachine, which was a very large Bordeaux property in the province of Margaux that Alexis had bought in his heyday. And Sasha sold it. Well, Sasha said, I said, what are you up to these days? He said, well, you think I could sell a $100 bottle of rosé? I said, Sasha, have you lost your mind? Nobody, it's hard enough to sell a $10 bottle of rosé, much less a $100 one. Well, here, I've got one, and he showed it to me. It was called Chateau d'Esclan. Today, you all know their brand. It's called Whispering Angel, and it was recently bought by Louis Vuitton for their luxury line. It's a fantastic rosé that comes from Provence. And Sasha did it on his own. This was his entire project, and he did a wonderful job of promoting rosés around the country. He traveled the world over, and today Whispering Angel is sold in over 100 different countries. And, of course, their biggest market is right here in the United States. And the wine, indeed, is a very delicious Provence rosé. And Provence is really an area of France, and it's a huge geographic area. It's a beautiful place to visit, particularly another 3-4 weeks. You'll have nothing but fields of lavender, these beautiful purple fields, like in Iowa where you'd see corn, or in Nebraska where you'd see wheat on all those fields. In Provence, you see lavender, and it's just absolutely glorious. It's a beautiful area of France, and of course, they make a lot of wine in Provence. In fact, one of these days, we'll just discuss all the wines they make in Provence. However, 85% of that Provence is made is rosé. And like I say, Whispering Angel is one of the big names in it. We've seen Hollywood people such as George Clooney and Brad Pitt have gone out to Provence and bought properties and sell rosé wines for there. And it's wonderful because rosé really isn't just a ladies' wine. Believe me, if you want a lovely aperitif, have a glass of rosé. It's pleasant. It's light. Usually these rosés are lower in alcohol than you find in white wine and a red wine. And virtually every wine-producing country in the world today produces a rosé, and almost at least a lot of the vineyards have decided it's a good way to use Vestangy that we talked about a little earlier, and they make wonderful wine. I think I've told a story before. I was at Chateau Clark, which is owned by the wealthiest of all the Rothschilds, and there's two other Rothschild properties in Bordeaux that people know of, Lafitte Rothschild and Mouton Rothschild. Well, Nathan Rothschild owned Chateau Clark, and he poured millions of dollars into it. It was wonderful property, etc. And they were having a dinner, and they served a rosé. And I said to Nadine, his wife, I said, this is just marvelous. Is this available commercially? And she said, no, we just make a few hundred cases to use here at the winery when we entertain for aperitifs. And I said, well, would you be interested in selling some of it? Well, sure. Well, I said, I'll take 250 cases. Well, I took the 250 cases, and we sold them in one summer season, lickety-split. And so I became a customer of theirs, and we are to this day a customer of theirs for that rosé. But that was before rosé became explosively popular like it is today. And like I said, it could be more popular if so many people didn't have this mental block that rosé is a wine for ladies and, you know, a real he-man doesn't drink rosé. Well, I don't know about that because I think that rosés are so unique and wonderful. And like I say, you'll see it more and more as your favorite vineyard is producing a rosé. I mean, they're jumping on the bandwagon like crazy. There's a time 15, 20 years ago, we would be lucky to have 8 or 10 rosés. Today, we have over 100 different rosés. And the French rosés are really kind of, in my opinion, the benchmark. Well, everybody makes very good rosés. I'm not saying that. But the benchmark is like the rosés of Provence. They're usually very, very dry. and they're light in alcohol, good fruit forward. They're great for salads and things like that. But Provence isn't the only area of France that makes a rosé. I just mentioned the Rothschild family. They were making that rosé in Bordeaux, and it was probably primarily Cabernet Sauvignon. The rosés from the Rhone Valley are primarily Grenache. The same thing is true of the rosés of Provence. And these rosés are really absolutely marvelous to try. There's another rosé from the Loire Valley that used to be extraordinarily popular. Everybody has heard of d'Anjou pears. Well, there was a rosé d'Anjou, which was probably almost as popular, at least in our operation, as Matus and Alianca, and that we'd bring in this rosé from the Loire. Again, decidedly sweeter. The rosés of Anjou are much sweeter than the other rosés of the Loire. In fact, we just got a very interesting rosé in, a Sancerre rosé. And I only say that's interesting because Sancerre is such a unique wine, a great expression of grape and wonderful, wonderful area. And the Sancerre that it comes from, the rosés that come from Sancerre, are absolutely worth seeking out. They're kind of unusual. And then, of course, we come to the Rhone Valley, and a lot of inexpensive rosé is made from the Rhone Valley, and it's made primarily from the Grenache grape. It really is surprising how much that is a food wine. Those Côte de Rhones that make a rosé are really great for maybe grilling burgers, or you want something very light and inconsequential wine where you don't want the wine to be the dominant thing. Salads are terrific. Seafood salad particularly is good with those Provence rosés. But the best, and the Rhone Valley rosés, but the best rosé, in my opinion, in the entire world comes from the Rhone Valley. It comes from a place called Tavel. And all they make in Tavel is rosé wine. And I like to say Tavel is the rosé wine for a red wine drinker. The Tavels have big power. They're bold. I was introduced to them a long time ago. When one of my very first trips to Europe, we had a few days we took off, and we're on the shores of the Mediterranean having a wonderful salad niçoise, and the waiter said to me, maybe you'd like a bottle of wine with that. I said, yes, I would. And he said, why don't you try Tavel? Have you ever had it? And I said, no, I hadn't. I tried it, and I fell madly in love with that Tavel rosé that we had, my wife and I, at lunch in a little fishing village off of the Mediterranean in France. And I think to this day that Tavel wine is one of the very best rosés made anywhere in the world. They really are remarkable. And like I say, the Rhone Valley, in my opinion, makes as good a rosé as they do in Provence. Only in Provence they make more of it. But it's affordable from both places. Côte de Rhone rosés and Provence rosés can get very high, as is evidenced by Whispering Angel's $100 a bottle and Sasha Lushin's Dream of $100 a bottle. But you can also get a pretty good rosé for about $15 to $17, even $10 sometimes. And don't forget the popularity of things like champagne. Rosé champagne is more popular than the most expensive. For example, one of the very most expensive and desirables of champagne is called Dom Perignon. Dom Perignon rosé costs half again as much as a bottle of regular Dom Perignon, and regular Dom Perignon is pretty expensive itself. So you see, the rosés are desirable. And whether you're getting a rosé from Germany, France, Italy, wherever, or California, Oregon, Texas, New Mexico, etc., they all produce rosés. And if you're not trying them and turning your nose up at them, you're missing a wonderful part of the world of wine, because these rosés not only have a place in the wine world, but they have a place, believe me, at your table with certain foods. It's a wonderful wine. These wonderful days we're having here in Minnesota and the coming weeks are a perfect time to try a new wine, and I encourage you all to try a new rosé, you won't be disappointed.
Boy, and you can find all sorts of great rosés at any one of the Haskell's locations.
Indeed. The folks at Haskell's love to talk about wine. They'll pair you up with a rosé that'll hit the spot with what you're preparing. Believe me, there's a Haskell's near you where you can save big dollars. We have over 120 BOGOs now for our summer sale. That's where you buy one bottle and get the second one free. And there's 11 locations. There's Haskell's in Bloomington, Excelsior, Faribault. Our Maple Grove store is 22,000 square feet of vineyards from the world over. And there's Haskell's in downtown Minneapolis for free parking on Saturday and Sunday. There's a Haskell's at Ridgedale, Plymouth, St. Paul's Highland Village, Stillwater, White Bear Lake, and Woodbury, too. And if you can't come into Haskell's, go to Haskell's.com. And don't forget, we do deliver. And also, there are some seats left on the three remaining boat cruises that Haskell's sponsors on the St. Croix River. July, August, and September, in the middle of the month on all of them. The July one is next Saturday. You won't want to miss it. It's a wonderful lunch, and you get to taste all sorts of wonderful wines and spirits from around the world.
Fantastic, Jack. Let's do this again next week.
You know, Denny, I'm going to look forward to that.
That's Jack Farrow from Haskell's.